You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right, so here we are, living it day by day. You are a superstar, and yes, that's what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. My name is David, and today I am joined by Dr. David Reese, a practicing psychiatrist for over 25 years and an expert in the area of ring psychology and wellness issues in professional wrestling. I look forward to an interesting conversation with Dr. Reese, especially in the area of performance-enhancing drugs, as this is a hot topic with the recent Lance Armstrong allegations. Dr. Reese, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Now, I had the pleasure of meeting you at this past year's Cauliflower Alley Club reunion in Las Vegas. Nice to speak with you again.
Yes. That was always a good time there, and that was great.
How have you been?
Good. A lot of traveling these days, but doing well.
Mm-hmm.
Back in California for a while right now.
Now, you have all this professional training, education, and expertise, but you admit that down deep you're a wrestling fan just like many of us. When did you become a fan?
Basically watching with my father back in, 1950s, late 1950s, before I was born. for people who lived on the East Coast, you know, my mother would go out to play Mahjong once a week, and those were the nights my father would wake me up and say, let's watch the wrestling.
It must be a lot of fun for you to apply your professional training now to an industry that you love.
It really is. I mean, it's been nice that at this point in my career, I'm still doing some frontline work and consulting, but I have time to do things that I enjoy that aren't just straight clinical work. That's really nice.
Now, like me, you have zero ring experience, so you talk from the point of view of wrestler-fan interactions rather than analyzing, you know, the actual ring action. But did you ever want to lace up the boots?
Would I have wanted to? Yes, but I knew better. I mean, my athletic abilities ended intramural basketball. I'm never good at that. So realistically, no, but it would have been interesting.
Now, I mentioned in the introduction that you have been a practicing psychiatrist for over 25 years. Can you tell us how you have come to many of your conclusions, you know, your scientific approach?
Sure. I have a sort of strange background, and I won't go take a lot of time, but I started out in engineering, so I sort of think in an engineering type of way. I was never pre-med and never got into that whole thing. And then I actually put myself through school working at the harness racetracks in Chicago. So, because I always loved sports and I always loved competition. As I say, I couldn't do it myself, but, you know, betting on the races was the next best thing to actually competing. So I worked at the racetrack for about 8 years while I was going through school. Still have connections there. So it's been an interesting path where I've gone from engineering to medical school, to psychiatry, and in between racing horses and wrestling.
Interesting.
Yeah, I have no ring experience. I don't pretend to tell people what to do or what they could do. But, you know, what I've always been interested in is personalities, characters. And in terms of wrestling, you have the characters in the ring, but also the characters in the stands, which I'm one of them. And that's where I've really focused, is understanding what's going on in a person's head. Why are people here? And that's really what's led me to what I've been writing and talking about.
You know, I always found that fascinating, too, as I started to really enjoy professional wrestling. It was evident that the action in the ring was scripted and that this was an entertainment, and yet people still have a wonderful time there. I read that you've evaluated over 10,000 actual people that, let's say, fill the seats and purchase the pay-per-views.
Right. I've worked in the California's workers' comp system, so I do a lot of evaluations of people from all walks of life, and that's what's really given me a unique perspective rather than just doing of treatment of a couple of people at a time,
mm-hmm.
you know, per week. So I've had that perspective, and it's really been interesting watching people and then applying it to sports, entertainment, and, you know, why people are out there. And wrestling is so unique compared to any other sport. You know, I mean, maybe we, if you go back to the 40s or 50s, you know, a lot of people were really seeing it as competition in the ring. Most people now know that, that's not the focus of it. Of course, it was always entertainment. And you can say the same thing of boxing to some extent since Muhammad Ali, where there was showmanship. But still, you look at boxing or to some extent MMA, which is across, you know, when those guys are in the ring, they're trying to keep their heads on it. You know, they're not looking to entertain the fans. Whereas the wrestlers not only have to keep up with the athletics of it and what's going on, and there certainly is physical pain as well as protecting yourself and the person you're working with, but it's entertainment. It's connecting with the fan, and that's just so different from, let's say, the boxer who, during the match, really doesn't give a damn what the fan thinks. Just wants to stay alive and beat the crap out of the other guy.
Now, that's a great point, especially with the power of television, and we really see their faces, all the expressions. They have to tell that story. I would say that every sport, all sports, really, are, there's an element of entertainment and business that goes along with it, not just competition.
Right, right. You know, and surely every sport has their people who we know the personalities, either because they're larger than life or they can make it onto TMZ or whatever. But you know, you take, let's say, baseball and football, and 90% of the people out there, you don't know much about them personally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sure, the stars you do, and people are following the stars. But most of the people on the field you really don't connect with as an individual, which is different from wrestling, where you're connecting with everyone who's in the ring, including the refs, including the managers, including the promoters.
Now, we spoke about how you look at the viewpoint of the fans and how they interact with the wrestlers in the ring. You gave a great seminar at this past year's CAC reunion on the topic of ring psychology from the standpoint of the fan. Could you share with the listeners some of the highlights of that presentation?
Sure. Thank you very much. And, you know, what's different in wrestling is you're following the same person week after week, and you're following them as a character. And for the wrestling fan, some of it is just very superficial, you know, letting out anger, letting out frustration, rooting for good versus bad, whichever side you want to take. But on a deeper level, there's a very complex psychology where you underneath know they're not really trying to hurt each other. And it's like, I really like you, but I'm causing pain. I really want to beat the crap out of you, but I'm protecting you. You know, on some levels, it almost mimics a situation of child abuse. So, you know, we're doing this, you know, we're doing this for your own good.
Mm-hmm.
But on a less, you know, pathological level, it really goes to what we all experience as kids at times, dealing with authority, dealing with people saying, this is for your own good, and trying to make sense of that. And in a sense, we're still trying to make sense of it, and that's what the fans are trying to do on one level, is make sense of, why am I being hurt by someone who really is protecting me at the same time?
Well, I'll tell you, when I was a kid in the mid-80s, I believed, you know, I was always a little suspect whether the outcomes were predetermined, but I believed in the characters, you know, that the heels were really bad guys. And if I'd have known back then some of the things that have become more evident now, I don't know if 13-year-old David could have handled that.
Yeah, you know, that's, and of course, back in those days, you know, no one broke character even out of the ring. I mean, I remember once, you know, I was probably about 19 or 20, I happened to be in a restaurant, and Bobby Heenan and the Crushers outside of Chicago, and I think there were two other guys, I forget, but they were walked into the restaurant, and as soon as they were recognized, they went right into character,
mm-hmm.
and they ordered their lunch in character, you know, and they were pushing each other over the table, because they knew people were watching them,
yep.
and outside of the ring, they were going to stay in character. Obviously, it's real different these days, but on the other hand, you know, we still enjoy going to James Bond, but we don't think that Daniel Craig is really fighting bullets.
Although I like him. He may just be the one who's actually fighting bullets.
That's true.
Yes.
And, you know, you look at the James Bond, some of their storylines don't really hold up to WWE or TNA.
Now, in that presentation at the CAC, you know, you talked a lot about baby faces, a lot about heels, and how they get the right reaction. What I thought was very interesting, though, was your discussion on the reaction of an effective turn and how
right.
to get that from a fan. Explain what you mean by an effective turn.
Well, you know, when a character goes from being a good guy to being a bad guy, from being a baby face to a heel or the other way around, there has to be some logic to it. Otherwise, it's just sort of random. Now, some people, you know, some kids and all won't care. You know, they're just going to go with wherever it takes them. But for your adult fans, the people who really want to be entertained on a different level, there has to be a logic to why this is happening, mm-hmm. and it has to go to something emotional. So the best turns are ones that really connect with the fan on when my mood turns, you know, when I go from being happy to being, you know, really pissed as hell, or from being, you know, basically an ass to a nice guy, and really connecting on that level of that. We all have aspects of our personality that are nice and not so nice, and this is showing it in an over-the-top way, but how to try to cope with it. When it isn't presented in a way that makes sense, you know, it loses something, mm-hmm. and then it's more superficial. But when it makes sense, it really connects.
Now, 2 years ago, you gave another seminar at the CAC. So you've been there 2 years, is that right?
3 years now. Actually, 4 years that I've been there, 3 years that I've given seminars.
Oh, okay. Well, I heard that the one 2 years ago dealt with the psychology of specific ring characters. And I thought it was very interesting how you defined the deeper meaning of wrestling storylines. Is that critical?
I think so. I mean, obviously, you know, you have very different venues if you're talking about, let's say, WWE as opposed to an indie circuit where you're going to have 50 people in the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
So it differs on where you are, what the promotion is. Some promotion are more family-oriented, some are not PG. But still, the characters have a uniqueness to them, and they really connect with characters that go back to literature, go back to even, you know, the idea of different personality types from the Greek gods and goddesses, some of whom were baby faces and some of whom were heels.
Mm-hmm.
It's put in a different media. It's put in our times. We Twitter about that, which the Greeks weren't doing. But, you know, it's the same thing, and humans are still humans, still getting caught up in dealing with the gods. And when they're in the rings, that's what they are. They're gods to us.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly storytelling is so different today than it was when you were growing up and when I was growing up. The amount of wrestling on television, the monthly pay-per-views, it's just different. For example, I was a big fan of the Mega Powers Macho Man and Hulk Hogan storyline with Miss Elizabeth because it played out over 2 years. We don't have
right.
We don't have that kind of breadth and depth anymore of storylines. What do you think about the way wrestling is presented today on TV?
You know, my personal feeling is that it was better then,
mm-hmm.
in terms of the storylines and the continuity of characters, the continuity of the storylines. And even the shows had more continuity. I went to some house shows and saw Macho Man and Hulk and Jesse and all those guys. Whereas recently I went to a house show, I won't say for what promotion, and at the end of the show, everyone came out from backstage. I mean, the whole locker room came out, and everyone did their finishing moves on someone else for no rhyme or reason.
Huh.
It was great athleticism. It was great acrobatics, but it lost the storyline. Now, the kids in the crowd loved it.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was like, you know, this isn't doing much for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'd rather see it where the storylines are more consistent, and they don't have to be totally logical, just like James Bond. I'm not, you know, looking for deep literature, but to have some consistency that you can feel comfortable that you're getting into a fantasy.
Well, I was actually had a similar experience. I took my son to a recent show, and during intermission, a lot of the wrestlers came out to take pictures and sign autographs, and I understand the pressures of making money, especially at the indie level, But that was a little off-putting, too, for me, because, you know, 2 minutes ago they were in the ring almost pretending like one guy was a savage, like he couldn't talk, you know, and 2 minutes later he's shaking hands. But again, I understand why they have to do that.
Right, right. And the fans sort of accept it, and, you know, maybe, you know, we're just old school, so, you know, fans seem able to accept it, but to me it is disconcerting. You know, I wouldn't mind seeing someone on the street and they're real different, just as if I met Daniel Craig. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I don't want to see them at intermission or in between matches out of character.
Right.
That just loses the fantasy and it loses the power for me.
Now, as you mentioned, you've been to the Cauliflower Alley Club reunion, said about the 4 times here now, the last 4 years?
Right, right.
Do you plan to return again this year in April?
I hope so. I mean, my schedule for the spring isn't set yet, but I certainly hope so. You know, I'm not sure if I'll be giving a seminar this year or not, but I surely hope to be there.
Well, where else do you give seminars and presentations?
You know, recently I've been doing a fair amount, from a different point of view, in terms of the wellness aspect of professional sports and collegiate sports. So aside from my clinical work and all sorts of other work that I'm doing, actually November 10th I'm going to be at the Thomas Jefferson Law School here in San Diego, where we're having an all-day seminar of doctors, lawyers, and athletes, and Adam Pearce is going to be there with me to talk about wrestling. On the title of it is The Gladiators of the 21st Century. Just what it's like actually being an athlete, whether it be pro football, baseball, wrestling. I'm actually bringing a horse trainer with me who was a jockey. Because there are very real pressures out there, very real stresses that are different, as well as we know more about head injury and the physical part of it. You know, I personally don't get into the drug side of it that much. I'm not a substance abuse person. Now, I leave that to others. But I get into the personal part. And, you know, what is it like when you're constantly being bombarded by Twitter or by, you know, Facebook? And even if you're an indie wrestler, if you've got a page, you're getting bombarded. You don't have to be on top to have that kind of interaction with fans.
And I'm glad you brought this up, because I did want to turn now to the topic of wellness in sports. And I want to read this quote that you wrote, just to make sure I get it right, where you say, talented individuals with media exposure, including professional and college athletes, as well as actors, singers, and others in the entertainment industry, are by virtue of their environment and circumstances at increased risk for exercising poor judgment, which all too often leads to dysfunctional, self-destructive, and even dangerous behaviors. I love that quote, Doctor. Is this something that we should just accept in society?
Well, you know, there's parts of it that probably aren't going to change for a lot of reasons. Some of it is inherent to publicity in sports and entertainment, and some of it, put in plain language, there's too much money involved for it to change.
Mm-hmm.
But should we accept it? It's just that's the way it is and the toll that it takes. No, we need to do more, and we can do more without losing anything from the sports. You know, just like the NFL can do better, can have better helmets and have better rules protecting people who get concussions, you know, we can do better in preparing athletes for what they're going to face and not basically, especially the ones who are very good, get taken care of and protected from, you know, elementary school or high school on, really don't have to fend for themselves. They're sometimes let off the hook when they shouldn't be and really aren't prepared for life when they don't have a coach or a promoter or someone who's invested in them and not always invested in their best interest, invested in what they're going to produce.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said that you don't deal a whole lot with the recreational drugs, that side of it, but what is your experience with professional wrestling and steroids? Do you feel like the use of steroids is down?
I think it is down because there's more testing. It surely hasn't disappeared. Actually, one of my colleagues who's going to be at the seminar with me has done a lot of research on steroids, and yeah, they definitely have their downside and their risks involved. You know, that doesn't mean that everybody who takes it is going to get into trouble, but it is a risk. And what's really scary, beyond the people who know enough to make a decision, is kids getting into it because they feel they have to. They really don't even know enough to make a wise decision.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like the usage is down. So you think it's more because of the testing, not because we're more educated about their side effects?
Probably not, because if anything, the competition is still there and the drive to succeed is still there. And people who get into that, you know, they're going to do they're going to cut corners where they can. And that's human nature. That's probably not going to change. So probably the pressure really does have to come from the outside, because from the inside of any sport, the pressure to succeed is probably going to lead people to do things they shouldn't. Forever.
Yeah. It does seem that there's a bit more of a stigma to it maybe than there was. And sometimes the only time we seem to not
True.
Them is when people get caught. I wanted to ask you what your opinion is on Lance Armstrong, whether the cycling community is doing, you know, the right thing by taking away his Tour de France titles. I know it's not a wrestling topic, but it is a wellness topic.
Right. You know, that's a difficult one. I mean, I've never met him. I know nothing about him. Well, I mean, actually, I know someone who works with him in his cancer charity, but otherwise, I don't have any direct connection with him. You know, on one hand, if it's true that, as it appears, that he really was doing all this, he got away with it for so long, you can understand they have to make an example and they have to, you know, really go whole hog. On the other hand, and I forget which news program was on last night, someone said, well, okay, they're taking away 7 titles. Who are they going to give the 7 titles to? The guy who came in right behind him, who was clean? You know, so, the whole sport has to be cleaned up. And while individuals, yeah, have to take responsibility for their behavior and, you know, punishment has to be dealt as need be, that in itself isn't going to solve things. You know, especially when you have, unfortunately, doctors, scientists who are always trying to stay one step ahead of those who are trying to test and find out and detect what's going on. I deal with the same thing, you know, in horse racing,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, we know the trainers who are looking for every edge, every tire they can, and what isn't going to be show up on a test. And we know the trainers who really take care of their horses and don't want to go that route. And sometimes the good guy doesn't always win.
Mm-hmm. I think it's funny that we look at a lot of our action-adventure stars, and it's obvious that some of them have used steroids. For example, when Sylvester Stallone did his Rocky movies in the 80s, I remember thinking, my God, is he huge. But we don't seem to care as much with movies and TV shows. Is it the competition of sports that we feel is being compromised?
I think so. I think it's the competition, the fact that we keep records. You know, you look at baseball, the home run records. You know, was it fair to Roger Maris that, his record got taken out by people who were using drugs. So there's more care there. I think actually, as some of the movie stars now are, it's taking their toll. You know, you look at them and they're not just aging. They look horrible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's probably going to be some more pressure there. But it's not the same because it's not the competition and you don't feel that he's cheating. It's just someone who's doing something maybe they shouldn't be doing, but it's not really cheating, so we don't look at it the same way.
Tell me about the Beyond Wellness Talent Management.
That's a program that I'm putting together, and I do have people on board who are dealing with the steroid issue and drug issue. You know, my focus is on basically protecting athletes and protecting the promotions, keeping people from getting in trouble, just helping them to make more mature decisions, let them know to look out for their best interest, and basically looking at people's level of maturity and where they need help building up some of that, working on it, and not just going on, well, you know, this has happened for years, so, you know, I'll take my risks and so be it. So it's really working on both prevention and also intervention when you have someone who's either on the edge of being in trouble or in trouble.
This is a big subject right now. I know a lot of kids, with whether they should play football, families are concerned about head injuries. It's great you have organizations like this, the Beyond Wellness Talent Management. But, Dr. East, what else can be done to mitigate, correct, or cure these kind of wellness issues or destructive habits, especially at a young age?
Yeah, I think the important thing there really is educating coaches and selecting coaches. And when I say coaches, I'm using that in a general sense, but basically the mentors, and making sure that they are looking out not just for this person's athletic future, but for their future as a human being, you know, and consciously thinking, what is this guy or woman going to do after their athletic career?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because unfortunately that hasn't been the focus. And I think once you start looking at it that way, then the rest starts falling into place and you're not going to be so protective. You're going to, you know, take a look when someone's headed towards trouble and warn them, even if the trouble may be down the line. But if you're just looking at, you know, how do I get this kid, you know, either from high school into the best college program where they have the chance to succeed or from college into, you know, the NFL or NBA, then you lose track of the person who's going to be there when that career is over.
As we mentioned, head injuries, certainly a big issue right now. And a lot of people familiar with traumatic brain injury, TBI, but you talk about the effects of a more subtle form of TBI, technically diagnosed as chronic traumatic encephalopathy.
That's correct.
Okay.
Correct. You know, going back to when I was trained medically, and this wasn't just sports-related, although I did do some sports medicine with the Northwestern football team, which gave me a good idea of what the psychology of losing is like. But seriously, you know, back then, a concussion was defined as loss of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
If someone got dinged and didn't actually lose consciousness, they could have been fuzzy, they could have not known where they were, they were just sent back out there as soon as they knew which direction to run. And you didn't think anything of it. What we're realizing now is even contact and hits, trauma, that is minor, that may not do more than feel like a ding for 3 or 4 minutes, over time, repetitively, takes a toll.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing this not only in athletes, but in the military, where there have been studies on, unfortunately, people who passed away, which shows that military personnel who never reported a serious injury but were exposed to concussions, whether it be in an armored carrier, but they had, and I don't mean a personal concussion, just a concussive force,
mm-hmm.
repetitively, you know, something exploding outside that supposedly didn't injure them, still showing effects of brain damage when this happened over and over. So even the subtle force of concussive force that isn't causing what used to be called a clinical concussion,
mm-hmm.
over time really does cause brain damage, interferes with concentration, thinking, impulsivity, mood control, and that in turn can lead to turning to either legal drugs, illegal drugs, which just amplifies everything, and it becomes sometimes very problematic and very tragic.
Are pro wrestlers the most interesting athletes for you to study?
You know, to me personally, yes, because I don't know of another sport where there is such an intense need to compete physically, causing pain, yet at the same time protect the person you're harming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a little bit of that on the racetrack, you know, horse racing, where two jockeys know that, you know, if you make a mistake, my horse goes down, I'm going to get killed. So we have to look out for each other to some extent. But I don't know another sport, you know, which has as much of the protection as well as the doing harm simultaneously.
Hmm.
I mean, surely not on the New Orleans Saints.
Right. That's an interesting perspective. Now, I mentioned that I met you at the CAC reunion, and we know that we see a lot of older wrestlers there really struggling with their health. Do you expect this generation of wrestlers to age more gracefully because of improved health, travel, food, and exercise?
Yeah, it's hard to say because on one hand, there's improved health care. We know more about it. There's more warnings. On the other hand, in some ways, the action is more intense.
Mm, good point.
You know, because every time you go out there, someone has to one-up the last guy.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to get more and more high-risk maneuvers. You know, even if it is PG, you're still getting more high-risk maneuvers. So it's hard to say. You know, from a medical point of view, there's more safety, but on the other hand, there's a lot more risk, too.
That's a great point. What's next for you? What new avenues of research would you like to pursue?
Right now, I'm really focusing on the wellness area, you know, with athletes. That's where I really want to put my time right now. And I'd love to be involved directly with wrestlers at any level. But I've also been involved with the NFL litigation on just writing some white papers on that. And really looking at bringing that to sports and entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
So That's what I'd really enjoy doing.
Now, a number of your articles are on your website. That is www.dmrdynamics.com, correct?
Correct. It's going to be updated soon, but there are a fair number of articles up there already, both clinical and a separate page that has my wrestling articles and political, nonpartisan political articles on the psychology of politics and all sorts of things that I like to play around with.
Well, we'll make sure that we post all that information, you know, when we post the interview here on OWW. Where else can people find you, though? Do you have a Facebook page? Are you on Twitter?
Right, I have a Facebook page, which is just through DMR Dynamics. I think it's DMR at DMRDynamics.com is the email that's connected to my Facebook. My Twitter, I actually have two accounts. I have at TrotDoc, TrotDoc, where I talk about everything.
Okay.
And then I have the Shrink Wrap, it's one word, which is devoted specifically to wrestling for the most part.
And that's the Shrink Wrap?
Right, at the Shrink Wrap. T-H-E-S-H-R-I-N-K-R-A-P.
Got it. We'll post all of that on OWW,
great,
you know, along with this interview. Thank you so much, Dr. Reese, for joining me today. By the way, Skyfall looks like a great James Bond movie, doesn't it?
I hope to see it soon.
Yeah, me too. And I hope to see you this coming April at the 2013 Cauliflower Alley Club reunion. Thank you so much for being here today.
Definitely. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Now, don't forget to check out the OWW website at onlineworldofwrestling.com for the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you're there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. You can email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM to get all program updates and announcements. We will also be posting directly to the official OWW Facebook homepage. Until next time, I am David. Thanks again to Dr. David Reese for joining me on the show today. I hope you've enjoyed the program, and Alex and I will be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio. All right, well, that's okay.